Button? Yeah, I think I just pushed it.
You're okay. Mm-hmm.
I have this thing.
Oh, you got that?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. You know how to work that?
She already pushed go.
Okay, so you're live.
Okay.
All right. All right. Great.
Does it look like you can do it? You just...
Sorry.
Yeah.
But she's good with that. Yeah. Guy there. Good. Okay. Good to go.
All right. Hello?
Oh, hi, Ed.
Do you need a 5-minute reminder on your time?
Sure, that one.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm supposed to remind y'all tonight is the last night. Sign up for pickleball. They're going to set the teams and everything tonight, so don't forget to do that before you leave. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. My name's Tracy Herrera. I'm 44 years old. I'm married to Tobias, and I'm mom to two amazing kids, Tobias the fifth, we call him T, and to Madison, who I call Maddie. So just a little background about, you know, how I was raised. So my mom, she was born and raised in South Africa, and my dad in Southern California. They met while my dad was working an oil and gas job in South Africa. So that's where I was born. I was born in South Africa. I'm the oldest with one younger brother. My dad's career took us from South Africa to Saudi Arabia and then eventually to Southern California where I grew up. So from the outside, my family looked, you know, strong, successful, but on the inside, our home was just, there's a lot of brokenness. My dad was a workaholic, and he was either emotionally distant or angry. Like, those were the two options we had with dad. You didn't want to approach him when he got home from work. Most often, you would find yourself getting yelled at or made to feel like you were a nuisance. And my mom, being in a foreign country, she was kind of isolated and alone. She really did her best, but she began to retreat inward. She didn't have a lot of friends, and she was to herself a lot. So by the time I was in third grade, the tension in our house was pretty constant. There was a lot of yelling, long nights of fighting. My dad was really big into just drinking scotch on the rocks, and my mom, you know, in those fights was just always threatening to leave. So that was really normal in my home. So I constantly worried. I was worried that my mom, she would leave us, or that my dad would die in a plane crash on one of his many business trips. And I would just lie awake at night, and I was afraid to fall asleep. Because what if she left and didn't come home? Or what if dad, you know, died in the plane crash? That's kind of how I functioned as a child. Just a lot of fear in my mind. And I felt the responsibility of just staying alert, you know, making sure everyone was okay. I mean, I was a kid, so the reality was there was nothing I could do, but I felt that heaviness. So that constant tension at home, it just planted deep seeds of anxiety in me. And that would shape the way that I deal with emotions and how I handle conflict and really how I saw the world. I worked hard to be that perfect child, straight A's, star, soccer player, people pleaser, just don't rock the boat. Growing up, my mom, she brought my brother and I to church, to a Presbyterian church on most Sundays, and she read us Bible stories every night. That Paul today spoke of, the Israelites escaping Jesus and the sea parting, that was my favorite. I loved that story. My dad never came with us or participated in any of that. In sixth grade, I had a friend named Courtney, and she invited me to her church, and this church was really different from what I was used to. There was a lot of fun, games, laughter. And so that summer that I hung out with her going into seventh grade, Courtney and I went to a Mo Ranch. It was called J.H. Ranch in Northern California. It was a week-long camp in the mountains. It was really the first time I was surrounded by just people who radiated love and acceptance, like that acceptance that I was looking for in my home. And I really started to connect that those Bible stories and that love of Jesus was like really lived out through people. So that final night at camp, I accepted Jesus as my Savior, and I felt a warmth and safety that I had never known. So when I came home from that camp, I started to pray every night. And I would ask God to keep my family safe, and I basically just prayed my anxieties to God. I also threw myself further into school, sports, my friends. And as I was in high school and high school went on, the dysfunction in my family really, really deepened. My mom started drinking very heavily. My dad stayed emotionally absent. And my brother, he struggled a lot with being bullied at school. And he turned to drugs. So my role in the family stayed the same. Just like, don't ask for help. Don't cause any problems. So in May, my senior year, my brother was arrested at school. He was 15. He had, you know, back in my day, you would go to the computer lab at school. And he was at the computer lab, and he had left a floppy disk in the computer with instructions on it on how to make a pipe bomb. And this was 3 weeks after the Columbine tragedy. So the FBI raided our home, and during that search, they found, like, every kind of drug you could think of in his room. And that moment just, like, shattered me. I was really embarrassed that this happened in front of the whole school. I remember just everyone turning and looking and saying, man, isn't that your brother? So after that, I just checked out emotionally. I was tired. I was numb and desperate for distance. So I graduated high school trying to outrun the chaos. I attended Loyola Marymount in Los Angeles for 3 semesters. But then I transferred to the University of San Diego, and I was chasing after a boyfriend who ended up cheating on me shortly after I arrived there at USD. So I was there at that new school, a little heartbroken, but I was still pretty hopeful for a new start. San Diego was fun. It was a lot of fun. But I definitely drifted from God at this time. I stopped praying. I went back to chasing perfection and people's approval. Tobias and I actually met in psychology class there at in San Diego when I was 20. Now, he had recently, like within the last few months of us meeting, lost his youngest brother. And he carried a real deep emotional sensitivity and vulnerability. And I was really drawn to that. So we fell in love really quickly, and we spent almost all of our free time together. Tobias was on the baseball team, and they were definitely a rowdy group of guys who played very hard, and they partied a lot harder. Many nights I found Tobias passed out drunk or stoned under a piece of furniture at one of the guys' apartments. But despite that party lifestyle, we thought the logical next best step would be to move in together. And then within a year to get married. I was 22. Now, I had visions of this perfect marriage. I really so wanted to be that chosen person, to be loved, and to have that desire to be somebody else's top priority filled. But I never expressed that out loud. When I got pregnant unexpectedly 4 months after we were married, I was terrified. My mom actually told me I should consider terminating the pregnancy, but hearing my mom say that just kind of lit a fire in me, like, no, that's not what I want for my life. But the reality of our marriage and life was hard. Tobias continued partying. I became desperate for attention and for stability. We fought constantly. He got a really bad staph infection in his ankle. Like, he had to have multiple surgeries. He was on bed rest for a couple months, and this was all while I was still pregnant with our son. But strangely, that was like the best season of our early marriage because he was home and focused, and I mean, he was dependent on me. He couldn't even get out of the bed to go to the bathroom, so it was a good time. So our son Tobias, he was born really at the end of that. Like, he was cleared to walk, he was walking with a cane, and then Tobias was born. And for a moment we felt like a family. He was not back to work yet, so we were just spending a lot of time together, and like that perfect picture I had in my mind of what I thought a family was. But once Tobias returned to work, the drinking, the partying, and the late nights returned. I felt abandoned all over again. Then when I was pregnant with our second child, Maddie, I hit a wall. And I told Tobias I was moving to Texas to be near my family. He could come with me if he wanted. He chose to come. We lived with my parents for a while, and then we moved into our own home. I felt alone in our marriage, and in a lot of ways I was. Tobias spent a lot of time trying to build his career and occupied any of his free time playing sports. The feeling of abandonment I felt as a child quickly took hold of my mind, and that fear, that anxiety, that was really stronger than I had ever felt. The fear of repeating my childhood and the lives of my children created just a really intense fear and a need to control Tobias. I accused Tobias of cheating. I tracked his phone. I tried to force him to talk to me, to love me, and to prove that he cared for me. I was desperate to avoid repeating my parents' story, but I was kind of really already living it. So out of my desperation to have a happy home, I started to pray frequently to God to fix Tobias, to heal him, to force him to choose me. And in 2008, Tobias was invited to a golf tournament I think a lot of you are familiar with. They play 9 holes, and then there's a break for lunch, and somebody gives a testimony. And I think that was the first time Tobias heard a man intimately speak about Jesus and how the love of Jesus impacted his life. And that day was the start of something new for Tobias, but really for our family. He started meeting with a man regularly, reading the Bible, and working through Operation Timothy. But I still didn't trust Tobias. To me, it was just one more activity that occupied his time. In 2010, Tobias convinced me to go with him on a family retreat to Moe Ranch. I was terrified, and I really didn't want to go. I didn't want to tell everybody all of our junk. But I agreed. Moe Ranch was the beginning of a real change for me. At Moe Ranch, I felt that love of Jesus through all the people, like I did that first time at J.A. Ranch when I was a kid. During one of the breakout sessions we had, we learned about the biblical role of a husband and wife, and it really hit me. I had spent my entire life trying to be in control of my emotions, of my home, and now my husband, but I was never meant to carry that. And in fact, somebody already went ahead and carried it for me, and that was Jesus. I was created to trust God, and in trying to control everything, I had been this barrier in between Tobias and God. That moment started a long journey of surrender, one that I'm definitely still on today. I study scripture, I joined Bible studies, I did Operation Timothy with another woman. I learned that Tobias couldn't meet all my needs, and he wasn't supposed to. That role belonged to God, and only he could truly heal my heart. So there was one night in 2014, after Tobias and I had another painful night of fighting, I sat outside on our patio, and I just began listening to worship music. I'm sorry for my sniffling. And that song Oceans came on, and the verse, "So I will call upon your name and keep my eyes above the waves. When oceans rise, my soul will rest in your embrace." And that really spoke to my heart. I opened my Bible to Matthew 14 and the story of Peter walking on water. And in that story, Jesus says, "Take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid." And I realized I was Peter. I just kept sinking, like a loop of sinking in those waves, just paralyzed by that fear that's always been with me. In that fear, I was just missing so much of life and the miracle of God just right in front of me. I cried and I prayed, and I just had this peace that came over me just sitting in my backyard. And I just didn't feel the need to just fix anymore. Just that need to fix Tobias was just taken, it was removed from me. So I just had a peace knowing that I was just not alone, that Jesus was walking that with me, and I didn't have to fix him. But God, he's really great in how he gives us opportunities to know him and become more like him throughout our lives. So while God, he transformed my mind in the area of my marriage and in my relationship with Tobias, I continue to receive opportunities to refine my mind, to receive faith, and my next opportunity for that, to surrender, would be in the area of my heart as a mother. So as people often say, our kids could not be any more different. Our son T, he has a calm, cool, and collected demeanor. He slept through the night from the first night we took him home. Growing up, he was compliant 99% of the time. When he tried lying, the guilt would just eat him alive, and he would just always tell on himself. As he grew, he was a great athlete, and it became clear he wanted to pursue playing soccer in college. So every year, he would write short-term and long-term goals on a piece of paper and tape them on the wall where he slept next to his head. He did this for 6 years, updating the goals every year. He was focused and committed to spending his time only on the activities that supported his goals. His senior year, his goal sheet said, be a good leader, be a good mentor to the freshmen, commit to D1 or D2 soccer, and be the district MVP. He did all those things, and then today he continues to amaze me. Last November, he actually tore his ACL, and he told me his first thought was to thank God, as he had been praying for an opportunity to grow closer to him, and he said this is exactly what that trial would bring him, and it has. So Maddie, she has been resistant to compliance pretty much from day one. I'll tell you a funny story. You know, they called me really a week ago to ask if I could do this testimony. When I was sharing with the kids that I'm going to do this testimony, Maddie said, well, thank God you have me, because I've given you a lot to talk about. So, this is Maddie. This is how she thinks. She's beautiful. She's athletic. She's an outgoing free spirit who wants to love everyone and have just the best time in the process. With her, I had a C-section. And, you know, when you have a C-section, you don't really see the baby a lot. And then they bring her in a couple hours later if everyone's checked out and good. And I just remember the nurses wheeling her in, and she is screaming. And the nurses said, well, we're calling her Mad Maddie because she has not shut up since she's been with us. That was my introduction to Maddie. Being part of the cool crowd was very important and always has been to her. No matter what we told her, what boundaries we set, she was going to do what she wanted to, and she was going to learn the hard way. Starting in 2020-21, Maddie began hanging out with a group of people that really scared me. Her reckless behavior escalated, and my mind lodged straight back into that obsessive control, fear, worry cycle. I just began to lean on my own understanding and just back to my good old buddy fear, and I just turned away from God, really. With Maddie, there were car accidents in cars, car accidents falling off the tops of cars, being run over by cars, lying, sneaking out, drugs in our home, and lots of partying. I would lay awake at night, checking Maddie's location obsessively, ruminating in my mind about her lying dead in the road somewhere. Worrying about her just took over my mind. Worry drew me further into myself and farther from God. At this time, our son, he was a junior in high school, playing soccer still, and he was being actively recruited to play soccer in college. We had a lot on our plates, and because of this busy season, I really didn't spend a lot of time with my parents. And on September 28th in 2021, my dad had a heart attack. A few days later, on October 3rd, he had a quintuple bypass. My mom and I spent the entire day of Dad's surgery together at the hospital. I'm there at the Methodist, you know, in the med center. And despite the circumstances, it was a really wonderful day, that day of his surgery. And my mom and I had the opportunity to catch up on life. We laughed about funny old stories and just sat together. This day, it was just a gift for me, a gift for me from God. He was letting me know He knows what my heart needs, and I'm not alone, because on October 4th, the next day, my mom never showed up to the hospital to visit my dad. My brother found her dead on the floor in their home. She was putting on her shoes to visit my dad. I had a paragraph here about how that affected Maddie, and there's a lot of details about her that are her details. But I will say, in the next year and a half, I mean, there was just a lot of grief. It impacted us all in different ways. And it was just a really busy season. You know, we have a kid going to college and a kid who's a junior, senior, and dealing with my dad. It was just a lot going on. So the summer of 2023, we dropped off T for his freshman year to play soccer at the University of Indianapolis. Watching T achieve something he had worked so hard for through all these years, it was such an incredible joy. But oh, how my heart, my mama's heart, gosh, would miss his company so much. And as we watched Tobias take a huge leap into life and enjoy every second of that, we painfully watched our girl's life and love for life disappear. It was her senior year. I was looking forward. I was expecting for that last year of her to have this amazing varsity volleyball year, fun senior year activities, prom, college decisions. And I would say in about September or maybe even August of her senior year, so straight in the beginning, she started having conflicts with her friends. And at first I thought, you know, it's normal girl senior year drama. But it became more and more and more frequent. And she started isolating herself from her friends, failing classes, sleeping a lot. She would obsess over small details, and she just wasn't herself. She also really got into clean eating. It's a big in social media right now. Replacing her late night Whataburger runs with chia seed pudding and oatmeal bowls. And then by October, we started to notice she had lost a good amount of weight, and so did many others. They noticed this in her. We went to the doctor, and the blood work ordered from her doctor indicated something wasn't right. She had off-the-charts high cholesterol. Little did we know, this is a common indicator of advanced malnourishment due to anorexia. We were referred to therapists who referred us to dietitians specializing in eating disorders, who referred us to pediatricians, and the list went on. And then in the end, Maddie was diagnosed with anorexia after EKGs revealed that her heart was not able to support her body. As a mom, like, your body is literally made to nourish your child, to give them life. Both of our kids were really chubby babies, 10 pounds when they were born. You know, that put them in like the 100th percentile. Now Maddie was in the 13th percentile. I was devastated. And Satan, he twisted that truth in my mind. Not only was I paralyzed by that fear, but I was a failure. It's the only job really that I'm made to do, and I failed. Anorexia, it is the deadliest of all mental illnesses. Stats are terrifying. A 50% recovery rate, 30% live with symptoms for their entire lives, 20% never recover. I was in shock. How did we get here? What did I miss? What did I do wrong? It was definitely the most pain I've ever experienced. So unlike a typical medical diagnosis, you know, if you get cancer, you want to get better. You're going to take that medication. Anorexia hijacks the brain. The very thing needed to heal, which is food, it's the enemy. It's just not, you can't just tell your kid to just eat this food. They won't. The disorder, it resists and fights you at every turn. It was literally a battle with Satan for her life. We withdrew Maddie from school in November of her senior year so she could start attending what is called a partial hospitalization program, or PHP for short, for eating disorders. So we drove her to a place near NRG or whatever, Reliant. We drove her every morning to be there at 7 a.m. and picked her up to go home at 6 p.m. This was every day, holidays included. She ate 3 meals a day and 3 snacks a day at this program. You know, there was like therapy, art therapy, group therapy, all kinds of therapy. She attended school there too. If she didn't complete her meals, she would have to do what they call boost, which is just literally drinking enough boost to supplement for the calories she missed. She gained almost 20 pounds in 5 weeks. We had hope. But then a few days before Christmas, the eating disorder took hold of her mind again, and she just stopped eating just like that. 2 weeks later, she had lost over 20 pounds. At this point, I was exhausted and I was desperate. Because of the malnourishment, her mental state took a severe turn. Her room, or what we today refer to as the cave, with constant darkness. I mean, she had piles probably this high of stuff. I don't know what it was, just stuff. And there was like a path to the edge of her bed, and then her bed was covered in stuff as well. She lived with a hoodie. It would just cover her. You couldn't see her eyes. She wouldn't lift her head. She didn't want to look at people. She refused to go out in public. Remember one time we tried to get her to come out with us as a family, and she ended up just sitting in the bathroom with that hoodie over her head, curled up in the corner, refused to leave. Her friends, busy enjoying senior activities, stopped calling or checking on her. If she did go out, her leg would do this crazy, violent, shaky thing, biting her lips, all the things. She was disappearing right in front of our eyes. There were days I didn't know how to pray, and I was so angry. It was really hard for me to look at her, and she knew it. Hugging her, I could just feel like every single vertebrae sticking out, and she would look at me and say, "I embarrass you, don't I?" And I hated that she knew that. I had to limit my interactions on social media, because seeing all of her friends enjoy their senior years made me angry that she didn't get to go do all those things. It made me angry because it was like we were forgotten, outcasted to the land of illness. I was home with her planning meals that would fit her 3-carb, 3-protein, 2-fat exchange meal plan. And my girlfriends were planning senior trips with their daughters. While everyone got to go out and live their daily lives, I couldn't think about anything else but this eating disorder monster that had taken over Maddie's mind and mine. Tobias and I, we didn't agree on what the next best treatment plan would be for her. Because she had lost so much weight at this facility, the insurance said she's done here, it's not working, have to do something else. Anytime Tobias and I tried to talk about what the next steps would be, it quickly turned into yelling. But I knew that the longer that she lived in this malnourished state, the tighter that this eating disorder would grip her. My mental state started to deteriorate. I missed our son so much, but I didn't dare let on to him how bad things were in our home. I've never felt so alone. I would spend late hours in the night just sitting on our couch worrying. But God, he met me there on that couch in all of my worry. A verse that I memorized so many years ago in Operation Timothy study. It's like the only verse that I memorized. I was really bad at that. And it was written in my heart during this time. It's Isaiah 41:10. "So do not fear, for I'm with you. Do not be dismayed, for I'm your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." And I would just repeat that to myself sitting there on the couch. "I will strengthen you and I will help you." I just needed help. I didn't know what to do. I began desperately asking God for that strength and help. I didn't even know what it looked like. Like, well, I don't know. You're just going to have to figure this out. I don't know. So while she was still there for that last week in that program, we needed, an option. Like, what are we going to do? And there were two options. We could bring her home and try at home, which we had already done and failed. Or we could send her to a residential facility. So I started talking in that last week with one of the moms in the waiting room. We would pick our girls up. And now this woman, man, she was so encouraging to me. She spoke God's truth. She would recite verses to me. And she walked with conviction that our daughters would be healed. She shared with me what she was going through with her daughter and with her family, and that gave me a lot of courage. She also recommended a Facebook group, a support group for moms of kids with eating disorders. So I like literally right there requested to join that group. The group, it was the start of that strength and that help that I've been asking for. In that group, there are thousands of moms all over the world from every country sharing all their stories. They also have created hundreds of documents and videos, guidelines on how to handle every single situation you could possibly think of for eating disorders. They also have weekly virtual support groups. And it was through this network of moms that God, he really started to hold me up. So as I described, we had these two options. And after everything that I had learned, I was very strongly convicted that Maddie needed to go to this one place in Tulsa, Oklahoma, called Laureate. It's a residential facility. Tobias and I were still not on the same page, even up until the day before we left to go there. He was scared to send his baby girl to live in the care of strangers, especially when she was in such a fragile state. And I understood that. But I was filled with peace, and there was no doubt in my mind. I knew this was the place where she needed to be. So we flew to Tulsa. And just a little note, these residential facilities, they're hard to get into. Like, there's a lot of them, and they usually have waiting lists of months, many months. I called on January 3rd. Maddie got in on January 8th. We flew to Tulsa on January 7th. And on the day of her admission on the 8th, you had to get COVID tested. So we got, you know, the swab, and we're waiting for the results, and we're sitting in the room, just three of us. And to keep her mind occupied so it wouldn't go into nerves, we'd play all these games on the phone, like all these crosswords and all these silly games. We were playing these games on her phone, and her phone rang. And, you know, teenagers, she was not going to have a phone for weeks, maybe months, depending on how she did. No contact with anybody, so she's holding on to that phone for dear life. And her phone rang. And, you know, teenagers, they don't receive phone calls. So it was kind of weird. And we looked at her phone, and we were very surprised. It was Tobias's mom, someone who we had not been in contact with for years due to the mom's struggle with severe mental health issues. We could hear her screaming on the other side of the phone, asking Maddie, "Why the F are your parents sending you away, and what are they doing to you?" Tobias immediately took the phone and hung up. And as upsetting as that was in that moment, I just felt like that was God's confirmation. He was putting our minds at ease that this is the right decision. Maddie could not recover at home, surrounded by distractions and outside influences. God was making a path for her to step into healing, away from the noise, in a place where she could be restored. So Maddie experienced God's healing hand there in Tulsa. Her roommate was actually a pastor's daughter, another free-spirited girl just like Maddie, who read the Bible to Maddie every single night. She was surrounded by an amazing team of doctors, nurses, counselors, and dietitians who were dedicated to the mission to help these young women and their families. Maddie felt safe to show her true self for the first time in a long time and receive the treatment she needed to be free of the demons that were holding her mind prisoner. She chose to do the hard work and to live again. She came home February 28th, 2024. And she has worked hard to maintain her recovery. Today, she eats freely, and she's back to her late-night Whataburger runs. Thank you, God. And His light is shining right through her. She is still that beautiful free spirit who loves to go against the grain. And all the glory to God for that healing hand. God continues to use Maddie to bring me closer to Him by learning to die to myself repeatedly. I still struggle with the sin of fear and worry. While all her friends are off at college, living that college life, Maddie has decided that college is not for her. Her choices in friends and boyfriends are very different than if I were to pick for her. She loves to live on the edge. She loves to take risks. And I'm in prayer now with God daily, asking Him to show me how to love her as He does, with full acceptance and grace. This is my second time giving a testimony. The first time was 8 years ago. And I will say that the process of looking back over my life and reflecting on how the last 8 years have unfolded, it's been deeply reaffirming. It's reminded me that God has been with me at every turn, whether I felt His presence or not, whether I turned toward Him or away from Him. He never left me. It has reaffirmed to me that He is a faithful and good God. I believe that Jesus died for my sins. He rose again 3 days later to give me new life, and I have put my full trust in Him. He is my Savior, my peace, and my hope. Thanks, everybody.